This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Scotland Outdoors podcast from BBC Radio Scotland.
Hello, and thanks very much for choosing to listen to this. I'm Mark Stephen. This podcast actually goes back to 2002 to a series of programmes I made for BBC Radio Scotland called Mountain Tales. Now, each of those programmes featured one of Scotland's iconic hills or hill ranges and what they meant to people who lived and weren't nearby. This one, it's the Coolins in the Isle of Skye.
I get incredibly emotional about them. They're almost like they're friends. I mean, it sounds silly, and I can't help, every time I cross the bridge or every time I see the Coolin, I just get that sort of tugging sensation inside me. And there's just something about them that is very special to me.
The spectacular Coolin mountain range dominates the southern half of the Isle of Skye. Said to take the name from the Celtic word meaning wilderness, the mountains are amongst the most rugged in Britain. The range of peaks are made of two geologically very different groups, often known as the Red and the Black Coolin. Taken as a whole, they are really a walker's and a climber's paradise. It's here in Sligachan, the northern access to the Coolin, that I'm joined by mountain guide Winky O'Neill.
Even today, when I came over from Kishorn and I turned the corner and get a glimpse of the lower part of Corrybastia and just the outline of Pinnacle Ridge of Skerdagillion, I felt the familiar sense of there they are. I nearly always feel like that. I can remember a few years ago when I was really so excited by them and I just couldn't get used to the fact that I was up there so often. I just could hardly turn my face away from them to look at the other mountains all around Skye because I just wanted to see them all the time. So I just found it very difficult to tear myself away and even look towards the mainland at all the other wonderful mountains that surround the Coolin. Now, I had to keep telling myself there is life away from the Coolin. You know, it doesn't begin and end here.
Walking up the track here with Winky, who is a mountain guide. And that's got a long and venerable history in this part of Skye, really.
That's right. I mean, the first official mountain guide on Skye was a chap called John McKenzie, who was born in Carbost, I think. He forged a very strong relationship with Norman Colley, who spent most of his adult life in the Coolin exploring and climbing with John McKenzie and putting up a lot of new climbs and routes in the Coolin. And a lot of the climbs in the Coolin actually have a Norman Colley's name, Colley's Route. There's Colley's Routes everywhere.
What does a mountain guide do nowadays, then?
Officially, mountain guides who are also qualified to take people into the Alps, climb above the glacier level. But we all tend to get called guides because it's hard to know what to call you. I mean, a mountain leader or someone who takes people into the mountains. But personally, I work a good deal of my time in the Coolin, probably mainly May and June, because that's the most popular time. And then again in the autumn, September, October, which is also popular, but the weather tends to be a little bit less reliable. One of the things I really like about the Kulin is the fact that you have a combination of touching rock and movement. And perhaps as somebody who used to run in the mountains, it's the movement on rock that I really enjoy. So, the peaks appeal to me so much for that. It's just freedom, just to move over rock, which I really like. But the bottom of the rock is gabbro. It's this famous gabbro, which comes in all sorts of wonderful colours, sort of chocolate brown and black and russet colour. And
sort of olive green.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, and that is just wonderful to scramble over. And also, the Kulin has all sorts of fantastic handholds and footholds all over it. So you don't need to be a rock climber to enjoy it up there. And I think that's one of the things that is wonderful about the area. Just about anybody who has coordination and a fair amount of balance and isn't terrified of heights can enjoy themselves, perhaps with a little bit of advice or help, and certainly don't have to be a good rock climber or a rock climber even.
My name is Luciano Camilli, but everybody calls me Luke because they are difficult in pronouncing. I'm 73. I like mountains. I was born among them, so I prefer mountains to flatland. And seeing the Kulin to me was like seeing what I used to see from my bedroom window across to the Apuanian Alps. All nice, sharp, tall mountains, and that's exactly where I am now. And when I saw the Kulin, I just felt I had to do him. I wanted to do him all in a day, which quite a lot of people have done them. When I did the Kulins, I was sponsoring for an extension, an oncology extension in Broadford Hospital. They were that nice with me. Without them, I wouldn't be here, let's put it that way. So I said that was my way of saying thank you. And the guy that took me is a lady. Met her on the Kulin by accident. And when I told her that I wanted to do it, she said, I will take you. I couldn't believe myself. I could have hugged her and kissed her when she said that. The day was glorious. It couldn't have been any better. The weather was fine, crystal clear, a nice light breeze, dry, which, I mean, the Kulins in dry weather, and you can't sleep if you want to. In fact, it eats your boots, it eats your fingers, that rock. It's that abrasive, you know. So I couldn't have had a better weather, and I couldn't have had a better guide. It was a dream come true. I did it in 14 and a half hours. I've never found anything which I couldn't manage, just scrambling up or down. The only part I wasn't quite familiar with was abseiling down the inaccessible pinnacle, but I didn't find that difficult neither. So I was in a high for about a week. I couldn't believe it. You know, I was really thrilled to bits. My life's ambition was a dream come true. That's how I can only put it that way. I want to do it again for the simple reason that I want to do it nice and slowly, to be able to absorb it.
One of the most amazing experiences recently was just, I think it was the end of June, and I had quite an elderly couple with me, and we were doing the Kulin Ridge. Now, the first day they'd had drizzle. No wind, but just clag all day, and literally you couldn't see a hand in front of your face. So they just trotted along behind me, and they hadn't seen anything. But you know, we'd got as far as we'd wanted to go, and we'd got our bivvy sorted, and we'd spent the night, and we were fairly comfortable. And I was hopeful that the next day would be better. We got up in the morning, and there was a sort of a blue sky under a sort of haze of mist. We went actually to the edge of the ridge and we looked out, and it was a cloud inversion. So we were above the cloud in the valley, and it was the most wonderful, wonderful, golden glowing sight. And we could see Blaven through the mist, glass, and we could just see the rest of the ridge, the northern part snaking ahead of us and across to Skernagillion. It was wonderful, wonderful experience, and it was beautifully warm. The valley was full of plume of mist rising, and eventually the mist went, but we just had that hour of sort of just perfect dawn. And I remember just at the time you just think I wouldn't rather be anywhere else. I mean, this is the most wonderful place on earth. You see rum floating out on the horizon, an egg, and a canna, and then you get views down to Mull and Benmore, and it's just endless. And even looking at the Sky Bridge, which isn't exactly the most popular of things, it can actually look very beautiful in the distance from when you're looking for Skerne Gillian. Coolin probably is the place just that has the closest to my heart. The good times are just out of this world.
I'm Grace Yoxon and I work for Skye Environmental Centre. I'm a geologist, amongst other things, and I live here and work on Skye.
In all the years I've been coming to Skye, I've never once managed to capture a geologist, and I'm very, very happy today. Because this place, geologically, it's so dramatic, it's so impressive, it's got to be fascinating.
Geology is what brought us to Skye in the first place. We came, like so many other students, on a field trip, and once you've got it, you can't get rid of it. I remember once hearing Skye is like a drug. Once you're hooked on it, you can't get rid of it. And it's true. The great thing about Skye for geology is that it's so obvious. If you look at the red hills, they're all rounded and smooth. You look at the Black Coolin and they're all jagged. And even without knowing any geology, you can see there's something different going on. And it's basically down to the rock type. The Black Coolin are really the core of the volcano that fed all the basalt lavas up the north end of the island.
Somebody once told me that the Black Coolin were stumps. And I find that hard to believe. I mean, they just look so wonderful.
Yeah, they're really dramatic. They're wonderful mountains to look at. But they, strictly speaking, they're the core of the volcano. If you look at the red hills, they're made of granite. And that weathers to form this round. It sort of peels off like an onion. So each corner gets knocked off. With the Black Coolin up there, it's made of this rock gabbro that we're looking at just now. And also there's a lot of dikes in it that weather out. And even without being a geologist, you can see straight away one's round and one's jaggedy. It makes it very easy to spot there's a difference.
We're standing here in the Sligachan Barn, and we were standing effectively on basaltic rock.
Yeah, that's the lava that came out of the volcano about 59 million years ago, if you can think back that far.
Slightly beyond my ken, but never mind. The other type of rock is gabbro. Now, you've got a lump of it sticking under your jacket there. This is sticky rock.
Yeah, it's brilliant rock for climbing. I mean, as you can feel, it's really heavy. But the thing from a climbing point of view is it's so rough. It's great from the point of view that your boots stick to it easily, but not quite so good if you slip and fall because it can rip really badly. Mm-hmm. A lot of the minerals in here have a lot of iron in them, which is why it's not so good to have a compass up on the Coolin. Because I heard once that somebody did something like 53 compass readings from one end of the ridge to the end and got 3 right. So it really points out how dangerous it can be if you don't know what you're doing up there.
Do you climb yourself?
I do hill walking. I wouldn't call myself a climber, because I think there's a fundamental difference to me. And I'll scramble, but I'm not confident enough to do proper, serious climbing.
Presumably, you can't just go out into the hills and walk about. You must be seeing things all the time.
Yeah, that's what makes it so fascinating. I mean, you can enjoy the scenery, and then you'll see a bit sticking up, and you think, well, I wonder what caused that. And you get, I mean, even from here, you can see these little rounded lumps. Those are so much later than all the rocks. Those are all to do with the Ice Age. And you're all the time through your mind, you're wondering what caused that. Oh, there's a little crack there. Why is that waterfall there? Maybe there's a dike. Sometimes you even subconsciously notice these things. And it relates to the botany too. Why do plants grow in a certain area? Maybe it's a lime-rich rock, these sort of things. So it's all related. We were walking on Benacalloch, which is one of the red hills rather than the main Coolin. But on this particular day, we were at the top of the hill and there was a rainbow. And it wasn't your normal arch of a rainbow, it's a complete circle. And I'd never heard of that before. Apparently with altitude you get circles, and sometimes you can see them from planes. But the funniest bit was that we were actually silhouetted as a shadow into the middle of this circle. And once we spotted that, we were dancing about like a pair of clowns at the top of this hill. We'd probably been arrested if anyone had seen us. Dancing around, watching our shadows dancing in the middle of this rainbow. It was magic.
Mm-hmm.
you go up when the mist is reasonable, you can get it swirling. Suddenly a view will appear and then disappear, and that's almost better than a clear day. It's constantly changing, and that's magical.
Winky, supposing
I was fit enough, which I'm not, or adventurous enough, which I'm probably not either, I'm not at all certain I would want to be a mountain guide, because I wouldn't want responsibility for other people.
Yes, that's true, but the main thing is that to work here, you do need to know these mountains, and once you know them, and you've spent a good deal of time in them, you know that you can look after yourself in most conditions, so you feel then capable of looking after other people. Obviously, there's always a certain amount of risk built into guiding, and it's inevitable. I mean, mountaineering is a sort of fairly high risk activity, and but it's calculated risk.
Just out of curiosity, do you ever get vertigo?
Not in perhaps the accepted sense. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't do what I do if heights bothered me. But exposure, it depends. I mean, there's exposure and exposure. When you feel that you're sort of in control of the situation, that you can handle yourself, then it's not the height that bothers you. I think, obviously, it's always at the back of your mind, is you don't want to fall off. I mean, there's no way you're going to allow yourself to fall off, because you know what would happen if you did. I still feel fear. Perhaps not fear, but I certainly still have great respect for the Kulin, perhaps more now than I used to have even when I first started.
Donald McKinnon. My family have lived in Elgle for many generations before Prince Charlie's time. We live right down the kind of shorefront. I run pleasure boat trips from Elgol over into mainly into the Kulin Mountains. We've been running for just over 10 years now. We were fishermen, and started doing the trips in the summer and the fish in the winter, and probably been over in total to cruise there probably about 8,000 times, if not more, you know. The loch, it sits right in the heart of the Kulin, around 2 miles long and half a mile wide, a big glacial loch. And from the house, we can actually see into Loch Cruisk. North of us is the Kulin. The Kulin sits about 4 miles away from the house. And we can see the whole ridge from almost end to end. And every morning when you wake up, you look out the window and you see that beautiful mountain range there. And there's something, there's a certain feel of them. There's no doubt about it. I don't think Elgle would be the place it is without the Kulins in the background. And it's certainly a place, and a lovely day, it can put a lump in my throat. And that's after going in thousands and thousands of times. So quite annoys me sometimes when you have people in the boat with a newspaper, and they sit down the back there and they read a newspaper, and I feel like going down ripping in half, you know. And you got other folk will say, do you not get tired of the same trip back and forth? But I think the beauty of it is the place is that as the sun comes up and the sun goes round throughout the day, it changes. The light changes, and it picks it. You pick out different corries as the day goes on, and it's not the same hour by hour. It changes all the time, you know. We mainly take passengers, but we have had some some strange ones in our time, I suppose. We had a film a few years ago there. A bit of it was actually done over in the Kulin. It was a film called Captain Jack, Bob Hoskins and Anna Massey, a few stars in it. And in one of the scenes, they were simulating a rockfall, and they had painted a huge pile of polystyrene rocks up just to look like the Gabbro over there. And we took it all on the boat, and actually filled the deck from end to end and about 3 metres high. And it was quite funny, really, because it looked so real. And certainly if that had been real rock, the boat would have been sunk long ago, you know. But we always meant to get a photo so we could send it to the manufacturers of the boat and say to them, she's a grand cargo holder, this one, you know. We normally run, actually, over into the Kulins mainly during the summertime. But I was over just south of Elgle, and then in the wee tender just steamed into the Kulins, not far from where we actually normally land the boat. And it was early morning, the sun was just coming up, and it was just beautiful. The top section of the ridge was just starting to come, it was getting a bit of sun, and it's just pinky red on top and all in shade below. And it's beautiful actually, as the sun rises, the kind of gap fills in, the light just slides down the ridge, you know. And it's so peaceful over there at this time of the year, especially. When I went in there was a few deer just above us actually. Had a wee otter the other day as well, just playing around the boat. But it's for me, I suppose, as someone who goes, I'm always going over there with other passengers. For me, it was extra kind of special in a way to have a day like that and have the time myself to actually sit and enjoy it as well. I'm sure I was probably the only other soul on the Coolin that day. Unfortunately, I don't get a chance to go in there as often as I was like. You know, obviously, in the winter time is the only time I really get to go in into the Coolin itself, and the days are much shorter, and the weather's not always the best in the winter. Most often, if I do take a hike in, I'll just go along the coastal path from the house here and up on Scoona Stree is my favourite. Scoona Stree is a beautiful view. It's about 1,500 feet high, and you can see straight down the loch to the far end.
People might assume that the worst part of your job would be the weather. Now, is that the case?
Well, I suppose in some ways I'd say yes, because obviously, and even today, you know, we've got wind and it's drizzling. Yes, there's nearly always some sort of weather being thrown at you when you're out. And once you get up into the mountain and you've done the walk in, okay, it's been incredibly windy, you've been blown about all over the place. But once you're actually on that rock and you start scrambling and your mind is then absorbed in the scrambling as well as just plodding, then the weather doesn't seem to matter so much. In fact, sometimes it can be really quite good fun in bad weather. Bad weather can add something, certainly atmosphere.
Far too much of a gentleman to ask you your age. But can you envisage a day when you're not going to be able to get up there anymore?
Well, I don't like to think about it. I thought it was going to happen last summer because I've got bad knees. Well, most people who spend a lot of time in the hills have got bad knees, but I started having all sorts of worse pains than usual, and I ended up not being able to work for a while and having a knee operation as well. But I think providing I keep the hunger to be up in the Coolin, which at the moment it doesn't seem to be abating, that feeling, I think I'll keep going, and it will take a hell of a lot to stop me. I'd like to think that I can go on walking well on into old age, even if I'm not making a living from doing very strenuous steep stuff. I try not to think about it. I just take each day as it comes, and at the moment I just can't even think about not getting into the Coolin. It doesn't figure. When I'm away and in other parts of the world, I think about them and the great times I've had.
As you can probably tell, I'm back now enjoying the warmth and the comfort of the Sligachan Hotel with musician Farca MacDonald here. Farca, this pub must be an absolute mecca for climbers.
I've played here many a time, last few years, many's a session going on to. Oh, I couldn't tell you, really, you know. You know, you get these climbers being in the hill all day, probably suffering from exposure, a couple of pints and they're going nuts in the bar, whatever, you know. It's a funny old life.
Have the Coolin inspired a lot of music?
I'd say they have. I mean, you can't travel through these hills and not sort of dream about various things. I mean, even if you're not a musician, you look up and you're just thinking, what made these hills? And you know, it's just so amazing. So if you do play music, you can't help but be inspired. And the various moods, you know, it's sunny one time, it's raining the next, and it's blowing a gale the next. I mean, every single different type of weather there, you've got a whole different feel. And, you know, when it's blowing a gale, you think some furious bit of music, whatever, you know. It's a massively inspiring place, really.
Do you go in the hills yourself?
I haven't been out that much, you know. It's a funny old life, because... But latter years I've been wanting to get up a bit more. I've done a few just small hills around the place, but none of the Coolins. It's funny, I've been down Wales, up Snowdon and that, but up in Skye, I don't know what it is.
This is maybe wrong, but in my experience, when folk live here,
It's kind of like background noise, the mountains. They don't fire up the same excitement and enthusiasm that they do generate in other people.
That's true, because I feel like myself. You know, you stay in Skye, you're brought up in Skye, and you're very used to the place. You go away for a year or two to Edinburgh, as I did to university, and come back and you're like, wow, what is this place, you know, and why did I leave it? And you just, wherever you go, you're stuck to sort of really find a place to be. I mean, it is easy to take it for granted. Kind of funny, like, very funny.
And as many a day when folk are on the boat and they're heading off early morning, we're dropping them in to go up on the ridge for the day, and by gosh, I wished I'd be going with them, you know. Unfortunately, I'm very lucky, I suppose. I work in and out there all the time, so most of these people would probably give the right hand to do what we're doing. So.
It's just something about the situation of the mountains, shape, rock, and what they've given to me over the years.
It's an amazing place, the Coolin. It's a place where you have poor weather. It's I can honestly say at times it's the most miserable place I've probably maybe been to. But then straight away you get a nice day and up it comes and it shows itself and there it is and it's just so beautiful. And I can't quite put my finger on actually what it is that kind of lures you towards the Coolin.
They've made me feel better when I felt bad, and they've sort of comforted me during bad times, and they feel like friends.
I suppose our family have been here for many, many years, and maybe it is maybe bred into us. I suppose many generations have sat down on the beach here and looked across onto it, so we're a wee bit like sheep, maybe.
The story of the Coolins and the Isle of Skye. Now, we know this podcast is listened to around the world, and we very much enjoy hearing where people listen to it. So if you'd like to get in touch, the email address is outofdoors@bbc.co.uk. Until the next one, I'm Mark Stephen. Thanks for listening.